the review of, so the feedback effectively from each of those three groups. And so we're going to have three lots of feedback. We effectively have an hour and a half. What I'm going to suggest, and I haven't said this to the leaders before, so I hope this works, that we will take each consecutively because you did have different questions. So we will start with group one to report back. And what I would like to suggest, given that that's an hour and a half, so that's half an hour effectively for each group, is that we do about a 20-minute, you know, between 15 and 20 minutes of report back, and then the group as a whole discusses the report back, if that makes sense. And as I said, I didn't share that with the leaders before, so hopefully you can accommodate me there. So, in terms of group one, and I've forgotten who the leader of group one was. Oh, Goro. You, please. So, I should give that to you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Let me see. Oops.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Our group talked about that the questions on wider corporate reporting and also consistent applications. If you move on to page three, I guess.
Do you want to move around so that you can see the screen at the same time?
Switch. Oh, yes.
Do you want to switch?
Yes.
It might just make it easier for you.
Yes.
Bear with us.
Sorry. Page two first. The first question to us is, what are your views on whether the ISB should extend its limit beyond the current focus of the organization to develop standards, in particular for entities in the private, not-for-profit organization? And the second question is also that the extension of the limit of the ISB. Do you agree with the proposal that the ISB should play an active role in development in wider corporate reporting through cooperation with other bodies such as the IIRC? Next page, please. The third and fourth question is that the consistency of implementation. And question three is, what are your views on the foundation is doing to encourage the consistent application of IFRS, summarized as follows: clear, understandable, and enforceable standards, guidance consistent with a principle-based approach to standard setting, and cooperation with the securities regulators, audit regulators, and national accounting setters, and the work of the interpretation committee and the education activities in support of consistent application, and also post-implementation reviews. Next page, please. And the fourth question is that the what else can IFRS do, or the foundation can do? Considering the resourcing and the other limitations, do you think that there is anything more that the foundation could and should be doing in this area, including scope for enhancing cooperation with others, enhancing work of education initiative in this area? Okay, then next. Yes, this is our question. And the first question, that regarding the extension of limit beyond the current focus to develop the standards such as private non-profit organization. And generally, we do not support the ISB to extend its limit because of limited resources. And also, we find we have found that there are two diverse needs and practices globally among NPOs. So it is very difficult for IASB to develop the standards which satisfies all needs and different practices. And also that one of our members pointed out, there is no global enforcer of standards to NPOs. So it would be very difficult for the IASB and the foundation to ensure that the consistent applications. We have found there is no need for comparability, particularly global comparability on NPOs. So it is clearly different from the cases with the public accounting standards for public entities such as IFRS. And also that Steve told us that the situation in the US, and we have learned that the US has a different standard setters such as PCC, other than the FASB, to support the needs for the accounting standards for other than the public profit organizations. Next page, please. Despite lack of enthusiasm to expand the ISB's limit, we need some consideration that the ISB and foundation should be aware that there are the NPOs who are willing to use IFRS. So, you know, as far as there are quite a few NPOs which are willing to use IFRS, maybe we should not neglect them. And also, some accounting for NPOs may be based upon the conceptual framework developed by the IASB. So we may need to monitor that kind of needs. And despite all these suggestions, we are still not very positive to support to expand the IASB's limit beyond the current focus. And next page, please. And this is also the question two is also the extension of IASB's limit. But in this case, in a much wider corporate reporting arena, through the cooperation with the other bodies such as IIRC. And our view is basically current approach of the IASB as appropriate, which means that right now we understand that the IASB is taking a quite active role in IIRC and corporate disclosure. Reporting dialogue. So, et cetera. But the ISB is not taking a leading role. And there are two diverse range of corporate reporting initiatives. So we are concerned that ISB cannot manage to respond or address all these different range of corporate reporting issues. And we do believe core competence of the IASB is not financials, but financials. And the IASB, we believe, has more to do in the financial statements and the financial reporting arena. And next page, please. But given the increasing importance of wider corporate reporting, we discussed that what the ISB can contribute to the wider corporate reporting. And the ISB may be able to contribute the other initiative through, say, non-GAAP or non-IFRS measures of financial for financial performance. And also, we believe that the clear definition of the business models for investors to understand value creation process better, etc. And all these information, non-GAAP, non-IFRS measures, or clear definition of business model, could also contribute, could be a good input to the wider corporate reporting, such as integrated reporting. And next page, please. Then question three is regarding that the consistent application of IFRS. What your views on what foundation is doing to encourage consistent application of IFRS? To be honest, we have found that the diverse reasons for the possible failure of the consistent application of IFRS. First of all, that the IFRS is basically principle-based standards, and which may have some, conflicts with the consistent applications. Try to implement consistent IFRS consistently, it may become more rule-based standards. And also, we have found that the difference in quality of implementation due to the difference in the level of enforcement among the national enforcers. That the clearly that the level of enforcement might be different among the each jurisdictions because of that strengths of enforcement is different. And also one of the members suggested that the consistent application might be hurt because of the translation issue. Since that the IFRS are used in so many jurisdictions, each jurisdiction must have that the IFRS of its own language. But sometimes this kind of translation may be obscure the nuance of the each standards, and particularly that the IFRS is at the principle-based, that this translation issue might be a quite significant problem. And the next page, please. And the possible solutions. Actually, this is Q3 and the Q4, answers to Q3 and Q4. And the possible solutions we have discussed includes more education materials should be developed by ISB to mitigate misunderstandings. And this members suggest that the most, this member have suggested that the most inconsistent application is because of misunderstandings of the standards. So that the more education materials would be a good solution. And also, another member suggests that the ISB's more involvement to guide the first-time adopters, the first-time adoption company jurisdictions should be recommended. Because, that it tends to be more difficult for the first-time adopters to apply that the IFRS consistently. And another member suggests that the use or collaboration with the accounting firms, because that the accounting firms provides that the consultation or recommendations how to apply that the each individual IFRS to that the preparers. And the other suggests that the collaboration with academics and educational institutions, because you know that this such initiatives would make that the more you know the people knowledgeable on IFRS. And also some other suggest that the more clarification before and after the publication of the standards regarding how to apply the standards. And the last comment is myself, but the collaboration with the national standard setters or others to gather information on the diversity in a practice. Actually, that the Hans told me that the ISB do not have that, you know, capacity. But that the I think that the even though ISB do not use their resources, I believe that there are some room to collaborate with national standard setters to find that the what is the problem in that the when we try to implement efforts consistently, so that the identifying the issue fairly the issue would be the very important. Okay, that it from that the group one and the is anybody like to add anything?
Congratulations, Goro. That was a very comprehensive and proceed summary of a discussion that me sitting in for part of it went wide and far. So well done. Is there anyone from that group who wants to add anything to that further? In which case, any comments or questions? And Lothar, I saw you had your up there. So
yeah, thank you. I'm nominally part of the group, but I was too late due to the fog and couldn't take part. But I would just, to begin with, say that how much I actually feel myself represented by what the group found and what Goro just said. I don't think there was anything I wouldn't have fully subscribed to, especially with regard to the extension of the ISB's responsibility to, let's say, the type of environmental or SRI-related reporting measures, which we have discussed several times. And I think it was very nice how the Goro said, I mean, there's so many things which are beyond the core IFRS, let's say, rule setting, which still depends on financial expertise and know-how which is present in the ISB, like the examples which were mentioned, non-GAAP financials and business model reporting by the companies. I would just like to support that after the fact, though I wasn't part of the discussion.
Thank you. That is refreshing. John.
I just wanted to say on the not-for-profit issue, I don't disagree with the conclusion that the group reached, and I was in the group, but I did have an issue with some of the reasoning behind it. I didn't understand the point about a global global enforcer. I felt that the assumption that the conceptual framework could easily be applied in the public benefit sector needs to be reassessed. And I think that there is more of a market for guidance in this area than was perhaps suggested. I was thinking back to the World Standards Setters last month, and I was quite surprised at the very active debate that a session on not-for-profits actually generated. And subsequent to that, the UK collective of accountancy bodies has done some work, and they got over 600 responses to questions about the need for international guidance. So to summarize, I certainly think that the implications for the ISB of moving into this area are very, very significant, and the resource implications would are severe. But I would contest whether there is no market or no interest in activity in this area.
OK, Okay, thanks for those observations, John. And Danita, is that your flag? I can't read it from here. Thank you.
Thanks, Joanna. Just one, I wasn't in this group, but just one point of clarification. There was a reference made to the private company council of the FASB doing this sort of work. That's not really what the private company council does. The PCC does work that for standards that could be applied by private companies. The FASB actually has issued some standards with respect to not-for-profit entities and are talking about whether to refresh those and look at those again, but just that point of clarification.
Well, thank you very much for correcting my comment.
Waiku.
Now, about the more educational material, as a board committee on education, you know, we are struggling a lot on this issue. Firstly, the lines between what the education teams can provide and what our interpretation committee can provide, sometimes it's hard to draw a line. Frankly speaking, our education initiative staff try not involve any guidance which can be provided by IFIC, which I think Joanna may agree with me. And secondly, frankly speaking, sometimes it is quite difficult for ISB, including the educational initiative, to do anything. For example, after we publish fair value measurement guidance, and emerging countries, developing countries, said we need more guidance. Particularly, they raised about 9 issues through EEG, the Emerging Market Group. And we provide some kind of guidance on unquoted equity instruments. Frankly speaking, the feedback are quite mixed. On the one hand, some will say, oh, they are useful. But on the other hand, some others will say, you just copy something from textbook or guidance from other the agencies. And furthermore, and some of the EEG committee members said, what we really want is not what you are trying to provide to us. So I can see the needs and the call from everywhere. But what kind of materials we can provide is still quite questionable.
I think that very valid comment, and a really vexed issue, which I think is why the question was asked effectively, is to how can it be, because different people have different wants, and I will say wants rather than needs, because I'm not sure that they're necessarily the same. However, that's the dilemma that we face, and I think that, you know, however we can work towards it, and some of the thoughts around here are there. So I think, is it Paul? Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Joanna. Just one comment on the question of consistent application. I think we've mentioned in this forum before that it's not necessarily one group that's solely responsible for consistent application. I think a lot of bodies have a role to play, whether it's regulators, the ISB, the audit firms. And just one practical suggestion. The firms meet with IOSCO on at least once a year. And I know that the ISB meets with IOSCO. One recommendation we would have is to schedule a 3-party meeting at least once a year. And that way we can start to air views with everybody at the table in terms of some specific inconsistencies in application in certain territories or over certain subjects. So that would be a recommendation to try and put that in place.
That sounds like a pretty good recommendation, and you can't see Yale, but she's sitting here nodding her head down here. Garth.
When our group was talking about education, I think it was also talking about it in a bit of a broader context as well, in that certain countries, when they moved to IRFS, just might continue using the same processes they might have done previously, when I think that needs to be questioned, whether they were the sole guardian of how the local gap used to be interpreted. They need to understand that IFS should be interpreted the same way around the world, and so some of the processes that they might have had in the past might need to be amended. And so the point that I was making is that I think the ISB can play a role for those countries that are adopting it to put it into context so that they can make any changes that are necessary.
I think that's a very valid point, Garth. However, I think it is, it's good to know that that's there and to do whatever we can. It's damn hard, and I will say that as someone who joined the Interpretations Committee, and I was blown away with the supposedly top people in technical from around the world who all had different views on some interpretation things and purely and utterly based on their background pre-IFRS. So it is absolutely an issue. However, how you resolve it, you know, that is the conundrum, I think. Because, yeah, you are naturally, so we've got to start completely again. We've all got to go out the door and start with the youngsters who only know IFRS. Okay, having said that, and having shot all of us, Peter.
I'd like to pick up on the comment that John made about the not-for-profit entities. I fully understand the argument about the focus and the efficiency, given our limited resource and everything, but I keep coming back to the point that this is a big wide world out there at the moment, it's changing, and not-for-profit has become quite a significant component of the economy. And what concerns me is that the IFRS groupings need to stay current and relevant. And what we don't need is to avoid something because we think it's outside of remit and then find that actually that fights back at us and we end up having to face challenges on our form of financial reporting because of what's happening in other areas. And I express this view in relation to company reporting as well, the integrated reporting. So whilst I would agree that it would be probably wrong to spend a lot of money on this, it seems to me that it would be very helpful for the IFRS group to remain a very key part of the debate on a wider sense on issues such as integrated reporting, such as not-for-profit. And I noticed, not that I'm greatly familiar with it, but we've had a great deal of success with on the public sector side, with the International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board, for them to base that on IFRS. So if we exert the same sort of influence, I think that it's in our interest to do that across the whole of the economy, even though it may not be relevant to most of our interests today.
Thank you for that, Peter. And what you've made me think as much as anything else, and I should have perhaps reiterated this at the beginning of the session, I think that it's extremely useful that these groups have had these sessions. They've expressed the views of a consensus or whatever of the group. However, I think what it's done is for all of us around the table to provoke thoughts as to whether or not we agree or we disagree, or getting to think about it. And I'd really, really like to encourage you, both from this session and from the other two, to have made notes and go back to your organisations and make a submission from your organisations, you know, around these things, so that there is more voice and your thoughts, you know, from. So I think it's really useful both for the feedback directly now from this group, but also to enable all of us to think, do we agree, or what are the nuances around that, to make our own submissions. So on that note, I would like to thank Group 1 enormously. Oh, sorry, missed you. Please.
Well, I would like to say a little bit about integrated reporting, actually. Well, I basically agree with the comment made by Group 1, and integrated report is basically far from standardized things. ASB should focus on financial statements or financial accounting standard, and should not focus on integrated reporting. And also from the user's point, from the preparer's point of view, well, integrated reporting should be a voluntary disclosure, far from standardized disclosure. So please think about that.
Thank you, Hirotaki. David and Yale, I'm going to perhaps ask you to comment right at the end, unless you want to do it after each of these sessions. Is that all right? Yep, yep. Okay, so anything else on Group 1's mandate? Thank you all very much for the discussion and the report back, Goro, and the comments. So now, and Group 2, Peter Chambers.
Thank you, and I'd like to up front thank all the members of the group for the debate. If you're expecting me to speak for 15 minutes on this, I'm going to have to talk very slowly indeed. The first comment I make is, what a handsome group we all were. The second comment is, we had a terrific debate, and I'd also like to thank the members of both the monitoring board, the trustee, and indeed the board itself for their contribution, because there's quite a lot of misunderstanding amongst some of the group members, including myself, about certain aspects of the governance relationships. So that proved very helpful. And I would say that we were very long on interesting debate, and hopefully that's provided some useful input to the various groups. However, we're rather short on agreed conclusions and action points. So on behalf of the group, I apologise for the lack of full action, but I do think the debate was great, and we could have carried on for another hour on that basis. We were covering governance and structure, and we had three sets of questions to answer. The first really was to do with the functioning of the three-tier system of governance, so the monitoring board, the trustees, and the accounting standards board itself, and really whether we felt there was anything that needed to be change there in order to improve that, and also did we agree with the change of the focus of the review on the from the structure of the bodies to the actual strategy, so we don't have to discuss structure every single time we do a review. And the third was that vexing issue as to whether fundraising can be strengthened. So this is the first set of questions to do with the governance structure overall. These are the issues that we really debated at length, and I've got some on the next slide, some suggestions from us. Overall, we thought the three-tier structure was appropriate, and indeed, if there was ever an example in the world to show that why you need a monitoring board on top of these things, FIFA have probably provided that for us. And we did suggest that a way to enhance the revenues of the IFRS groupings is to sell the governance structure to FIFA. And I'm sure they'll make a very handsome payment. Who they make the payment to, of course, is a different issue. There were some issues, though, that we did debate at length. The firstly was the accountability of the trustees and also the independence of the standard setting itself. So through the governance structure, through the monitoring board people, through the trustees, are there pressures being brought from political angles or anything else that could impair the independence of the standard setting? And we felt the structures were broadly appropriate to avoid that. There's always going to be some political pressure in any grouping, but generally speaking, we felt that would work. The debate about whether the monitoring board itself should refer agenda items to the trustees and indeed the board, or whether the monitoring board should do what it says, which is monitor. So how much more involved should it be than general monitoring, and there was no consensus view on that. There's also issues as to whether there's overlapping responsibilities between the monitoring board and the trustees. One specific example we discussed in this respect was the appointment of the ISB chair, which is the responsibility of the trustees, but clearly the monitoring board has an involvement with that. So is that perfectly clear? Is that working? Should that work as better than it will do with this arrangement? So those are the sorts of issues we're dealing with here. And then we couldn't get away from the issues of representation. So from the monitoring board, which authorities should truly be represented on that board? Should it be linked to funding? The funding itself is responsibility of trustees, so should the monitoring board be involved in the fundraising in any shape or form? And there's quite a strong view that the monitoring board should insist on consistent application, if that's possible. And then the point about the OSCO observer was really there are people involved with this as observers who maybe want roles on the board who might not necessarily have the same level of devotion to IFRS that those bodies on at the moment, like, for example, the European Union, which is the group that has decided for Europe that IFRS is the appropriate way forward. So does everybody on that board have the same sort of background and mission? How do you keep politics out of it and all the rest of it? So the solutions we came up with, suggestions where we did have some form of agreement in the group, were firstly that there was a lack of knowledge on precisely how the monitoring board is structured and works. And we would suggest that actually there should be much greater communication to the stakeholder groups, especially on the monitoring board, and give clarity to how it operates and how it relates to the IFRS trustees. And also issues as to the criteria in which it is monitoring the IFRS grouping. On the funding, you can't get away from the fact that there will always be issues of funding. And for the monitoring board, that should be sort of light touch to try and help coerce people into providing some action and some money, whereas the actual fundamental responsibility rests with the trustees. And then there was an issue that we debated a great deal, in fact raised by a member of the monitoring board, as to how active the board should be on issues of public interest. And there was a wide debate around that, and I think the grouping drew some comfort from the fact that the monitoring board works on a consensus basis. So if there was a political view coming from Europe or from Asia or some other place, it could only go forward if there was a consensus view across the monitoring board that it was an issue of significant public interest and therefore should be taken down to the trustees. So all in all with that, we felt that generally speaking it's working well, but we could do some improvements, particularly in terms of transparency and clarity. There then was a short debate which we had to stop as to whether the monitoring board is part of the foundation or not. I think the answer is it's not. And we probably should keep it that way. But if you want another long debate on something, this is a subject you can put back on the agenda. The second group of questions were really to do with the trustees. And I remember, exactly what we were discussing. The first item with the trustees is the geographical distribution of trustees and whether that's appropriate. And linked to that, the second question was the skill basis and experience basis of the trustees. And how should the trustee grouping be put together to work on that? And then we also had the issues about the five-year review as to whether it should be a looking at the structure or the strategy of the group. And we felt that when you go through all of these items, this chart and the next chart hopefully will cover them, that we agree that, I think we did widely agree, that the mechanism should be changed so that we're looking primarily at strategy in the review. But the problem is if you leave structure out of it, there might be something that happens in the world, another financial crisis or something, that will make you want to review that structure. Because it's possible, although the structure works now and it seems to have some legs to it, if you don't review it, you could end up in trouble. So I think the view is yes, do base the review on strategy, but make sure there's a mechanism there to include structure should it become an issue at some point in the future. And on the 5 years, should it be a five-year term or shorter? I think the view was yes, it can be 5 years, but then there's a debate, is it 5 years from the start of the review process or 5 years at the end of the review process, and the reviews themselves take a couple of years or more? So is it really a three-year review because you're taking 2 years to do the review and so on and so forth? So this then led to a whole debate about whether, and coming back to Hans's comment earlier on, about whether the organisation operates quickly enough and providing reviews of everything it does, whether it's a review of strategy or a review of an individual accounting standard. And so we discussed it at length, and I think we felt that the organisation should try and move a lot quicker if it's at all possible. And there are two areas we focused on. Firstly, is the due process creep, which is just making things last for longer. Secondly, could we be quicker at the front end with the research and setting things up to ensure that we move quicker through the process? And I suppose the third item is, are we crisp enough with the decision making? Or do we go for another part of review or just say, right, that's enough and move on? So I think there was a view in the council that there was some sympathy that the decision making probably should be shorter in duration rather than longer. And if you want some more advice from us on that, Hans, then again, ask a question and we'll come back. So front loading was a factor on that one. On the funding issue, I forgot about that. We came up with no suggestions whatsoever. Apart from the fact we did agree it was very wise to build up reserves of a year in case you have inconsistency of funding. Part of the issue here is that each jurisdiction funds in a different way. So, for example, in the UK, it's done through a levy on corporates, whereas in Australia, it's straight from the Treasury. And it's very difficult to have a consistent approach to funding when countries take very different approaches. And so a bit piecemeal, it's very difficult to come up with a broad brush recommendation. And having sat on the supervisory board for EFRAG, I know how difficult it is to get all the funding in place in the first place. So I'm afraid we couldn't help much more on that one. On the trustee structure, again, an interesting debate. I think we felt that there are a number of things that need to be taken into account, as well as the geography. Clearly, the skill bases are absolutely crucial, and there's some issues as to whether or not the skill bases are appropriate at the moment. Are there enough people with an investor background, for example? Are there too many people from a government body or regulatory body background? The gender issue is always going to be there. Of course, if you can get a better gender balance, that would be right. But somewhere along the line, there also has to be an issue as to ensuring that you have the right quality of people coming on board, and that those people, given their backgrounds, have to be able to operate in a way that they are impartial to jurisdictions that worked before. So if they've been a preparer in the past as part of their working life, and they move on at a later stage in their career to be part of the trustees, they're not there to represent the preparers per se, but their knowledge of preparers can really help the wider debate that happens within the trustee grouping. The key issue that was debated, how do trustees keep current? How do they keep current with changes in technology? How do they keep current with investor views and that sort of thing? I know from my own experiences at ANED, it's quite difficult to keep in touch with these things, so that's a very valid aspect. Maybe part of the education will be also on the trustees and board members to ensure that their skill bases are high. And I put down knowledge, and I think that was really on the basis that we discussed that the most important thing for the foundation trustees in aggregate is to have the knowledge required in aggregate that's required to be able to be effective as a body. So it's knowledge, experience, and skill basis. The last one was the same sort of questions really on the board this time rather than the foundation trustees, which is specifically, should we agree with the recommendation to cut the size of the board from 16 to 13? Secondly, should we agree to the amendment in the constitution on skill sets? And thirdly, the second term, should that be 3 years or 5 years? Most of the debate was on the size of the board, and it's highlighted really by comments that Ian made, which I put up front here. The bigger boards give you more inclusiveness, so better representation. The smaller boards give you much greater efficiency, both in terms of the ability to get things done, but also less expenditure, because obviously the extra cost of three board members is material. The view was that it's currently 14 is working well, so I don't think that the discussion group had really the basis to say, well, 13 would be better than 14. But as long as we can get a balance between those two issues of ensuring there's appropriate inclusiveness for the groups around the interest, stakeholder groups around the world to buy into the board and its membership, but it's also small enough to be efficient, then I don't think people really minded whether it was 13, 14, 15 or 16. So it's up to judgment, really, and we were quite happy with 14 if that was the choice, or 13. Where there was a little bit of a split was how to work with these groups. So we really debated that if you have a smaller board, then that would be more efficient. But in order to really gain the buy-in around the world, we need to make more use of the outreach program that's been in place. And I personally thought it was one of the more sensible comments that we came up with. And also, if you have a smaller board, you really do have to be very strong on your due process and very crisp with it to make sure it works. We had also an issue as to whether one way of being more efficient is to have some of the board members part-time. It's been pointed out that's happened in the past, particularly with academics. There was no firm conclusion, but if that could work, that may be part of the answer. But that, again, really, we think, really must be at the judgment of the board and the trustees. And on 3 or 5 years, we had a debate, but at the end of the day, we did not come up with a clear view. Either can work. My conclusion with all of this, actually, is that because we came up with a relatively small number of suggestions, the whole mechanism must be working pretty well. So the three-tier governance system must be working pretty well. And by and large, the recommendations put forward are reasonably sensible. I don't know if I've encapsulated a very wide-ranging and disparate debate, but I've tried.
Well, I'm going to make the first comment. You obviously spoke really, really, really slowly because you are well over 15 minutes. Sorry, Peter. Anybody else from Group 2 like to add to what Peter had to say there? I thought it was a good report back from having sat through the last half of that session. No? Hitotaki. Hitotaki. Yeah, sorry, you're straight in my line of sight.
Well, actually, in terms of the size of board members, perhaps diversity is one of the key words. So, efficiency could be taken into account, but at the same time, IFRS is increasingly being adopted in lots of countries. So if we think about that situation, well, diversity should be taken into account when we think about the size of the board members. That's one additional comment.
Thank you, Hitotaki. Any comments from anybody not in that group around the conclusions and, if you like, Peter's summing up at the end that it doesn't look as though it's broken the way they didn't have that many recommendations? Yes.
Thank you very much. I was looking actually a bit more insight on the funding side, but obviously we didn't have time enough for that. But this is an important issue. Keep coming back. I don't know what's the views of others, but I thought it might be useful to designate a session in a future meeting where we understand your funding model right now and what you have considered and didn't work and why it didn't work, and then open it up to everybody to chip in. I think this is something that would be very useful. I've been here for a number of meetings and this keep coming up again and again.
Yael, do you want to comment on that now in terms of that suggestion or wait till the end?
No, I'm happy to bring an update. Actually, in my report, I intended to include some of the details on that. I understand people are interested in that. Happily.
I think there is no doubt it does keep coming up over and over again, and it is a real issue for the foundation. And I think Yael and the trustees would be delighted if this group could come up with some thoughts as to how we might... And some money, okay, as David says. All right, some thoughts and, more importantly, some money. So maybe it is something that we look at as to how we bring it back to this group. Olav.
I think I would just like to first of all agree with the view that take the view that we shouldn't really be looking at reducing the number of board members, and I think echoing the point made that it should reflect the usage of IFRS both now but also as it evolves, it should evolve with the user base of IFRS.
Interestingly, one thing that did come up in the group was obviously was that discussion, and then saying, well, actually, we've got 140 countries or whatever the number is, sorry Hans, that have adopted IFRS, and we can't have 140 board members. So, you know, which is why the actually saying the recommendation, I think, from the group, Peter, and I'm summarising here what I took from that, was that actually to make it efficient and effective in terms of the actual deliberations around the board, but to ensure that the inclusiveness of those 140 countries, you know, is in other means. But it is a dilemma, there's no doubt about that. Any other questions or comments? No? Oh, Gyath again.
Just to tie up a little bit of the discussion of this group to the previous group on the background of the trustees, even though the first group recommended not to expand the mandate into other areas, but we strongly encouraged the board to keep an eye on development in this area. So maybe this is a consideration for a few members at least to be with a relevant background.
Yeah, no, very good point in terms of that experience of trustees. Okay, Stephen, hand over to you for your report back, please.
Thank you. And David reminded me at lunch not to open my mouth again when somebody suggests something on technology. I'd like to thank the group as well for a very detailed and interesting discussion on a topic which I think is fairly difficult to come to grips with. We're looking at two questions, the first on the taxonomy, and then the second was on a sort of a more holistic view of where technology might lead us and how the IFRS may maintain its relevance in terms of that. In terms of the way we went about it, we actually looked, I think, really at question two first, because I think that leads us really into some of the answers for question one. So we started off looking at the technology and IFRS, and I think the first thing we felt was important was that technology is just really an enabler, and that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the high quality reporting and the standards and the importance of the brand must take sort of first place in terms of what we're thinking. Before the meeting, though, I did circulate to people in the group, and I think hopefully everybody got it, was just some thoughts and sort of asking for people to think about disruptive technology and some of the things that might be disruptive. And unfortunately, one of the things about disruptive technology is that the things we don't know are going to happen. So it's very difficult to try and think of things that we don't know are going to happen in the future. And I think that probably is one of the difficulties, is that really it's more a case of being aware of what might happen and having a process to deal with it when it does. But we did go through a sort of a brainstorming session as to what the main areas that we would consider at the moment. I think the first was really the question of, does technology really push the real-time information subject forward? And how does that impact IFRS? And the difference possibly between preparers and the fact that, you know, real-time information is great, but is it too much for users? Is it something we need to consider for external users differently from internal users? The second, what I would say, sort of idea, and I've said they're attributes of data. I think one of the issues with accounting at the moment is we're trying to write something for a particular story, a particular purpose, and that story doesn't always fit everybody's needs. And so the concept of having more data, or big data, meaning that rather than have a flat view, you can almost have a 3D view of financial information. So you could have, as an example, you could have the same item, but you could have the data of cost, you could have the data of fair value, you could have the data of replacement cost, all embedded in the same data set, and be able to take your own view of what the information was. We see it a little bit at the moment in terms of we sometimes, or the ISB sometimes puts this information in the notes to the accounts rather than in the accounts themselves. But with the concept of having just mass information, the concept of being able to actually add more attributes was something we looked at. And the third idea we had was really looking forward, I think we said at the time 10 years, but maybe it's not 10 years, was the sort of Wikipedia type concept that maybe instead of doing interpretations, we'll just leave it up to the world to decide what the right answer is. With sort of social networking, whether that really will take off in terms of the ability to start sort of that conversation in space, as it were, to come up with what is the consensus argument. So these were really just trying to think through things that we could foresee happening. I think the problem with all of this is that we are trying to look at something that we really don't know. An example I mentioned to the group from our from Deloitte's perspective, we've been looking at innovation in audit. We've been looking at it for a long, long time. We really find it very difficult to do because we're all auditors. We then got, I think it's three or four entrepreneurs who are about 21 to 25 in Canada, and we've put them away in a little room for a year and a half to come up with what the audit should look like. And I tell you, they're coming up with some very, very strange things, but they are moving it forward where we couldn't, because we couldn't understand what was going on. And so I think sometimes the sort of disruptive technology is something that others may understand a little bit better than us. So I think in terms of the thought process, we went on to look at, well, what is the process we have in place at the moment, and are there things that could be changed to make it more ready, shall we say, for technology? I think one of the first things we raised is, do we really think the board understand technology? And should we be looking at having people on the board who are more technology experts, or at least having a greater understanding? And maybe need to look at the staff as well to see that we actually have a group of people who are ready for change. The second point, and I think the paper actually brings this up in any case, is the use of an expert group. And we discussed that a little bit as to whether that was something that met once a year or was basically a connected group that was there all the time and possibly every year would come up with a sort of a photo shot of where they thought technology was and the potential impact it might have on standards, so that there was an update, possibly on an ongoing basis, but at least once a year of feedback. We also felt that there was important to get the connectivity on technology and change with other organizations, whether it was IOSCO or with the integrated reporting or others, just to make sure that we are aware of what is changing and that there is a process to actually understand that. And then finally, just the whole concept of horizon scanning and trying to understand what is actually coming down the road. If we just move on to the next. We also considered the sort of indirect impact of technology and possibly not just technology but innovation, and how that may be something that the ISB does need to keep aware of, in that there is a lot of changing business models out there. And the business, you know, being with certain of the standards now focused on business model, there is a significant change in the speed of development of new business models. I've personally had some involvement with the gaming people in China, where they're selling very strange items that you can attach to your player in a virtual space that's paid for in very, very strange ways, and you win things and you don't win things, and you can use them to buy other things. Very, very different business model to what we're used to. But we're even seeing it in the more normal, the more understandable businesses, such as supermarkets and the Alibabas, as to whether they actually are principals or agents, and what is that new business model. And those business models are evolving at an ever-increasing pace. So I think it was felt that it's not just technology, but it's innovation itself that needs to be watched and to make sure that there's a speed of response to address those issues. So we then move back really to look at the first question, which was the taxonomy itself and how that played a part in the standards and what we felt the current situation was. I think there was general support for the direction being taken. I think it was generally agreed that it needs to be considered in standard setting process, but it shouldn't be driving the standard setting process. It was felt that the were some benefits from having the standards developed with the taxonomy alongside, if only to give clarity sometimes to what the standard was supposed to say. It's possibly the same issue that we see with translation. Sometimes when you translate the standards, you find actually it's not a problem with the translation, it's possibly a problem with the standard in the first place and the clarity that it had. I think you get the same benefit when you try and look at the taxonomy. If it doesn't seem to work in the taxonomy, it's not you need to change the standard, but there may be a better clarification needed. I think there was it was felt that it was important that the IFRS kept the taxonomy as part of its I was going to say armory. That's probably the wrong. But it was important the integrity of that information because as we go forward, there is a possibility that that we get more and more electronic filings as we do. People may or may not, as I say, place more reliance on this. So it was felt that it's very important that the ISB does continue on the taxonomy track. We felt that it needed to be an open taxonomy and not necessarily XBRL. We need to really not be tying ourselves to one product because there could be many other products coming down the track. In terms of promoting it, we felt that there might be a benefit from having a survey on current electronic filing to just see where we are with that, rather than necessarily get involved, but just to really have a view of where we are with regard to the use of taxonomies. And also there was a benefit for working with the security regulators to promote the use of the taxonomy. Again, just on the basis of actually working with them rather than actually taking necessarily a lead in that area. We had discussions around verification or audit of the taxonomies. It was felt that one of the reasons people possibly were not relying on them at the moment was that they didn't know whether they were actually correct or not, and that there might be a need for some verification, but that probably lies more with the security regulators. And then we did touch briefly on the concept of non-financial data being in the taxonomy, but really from a perspective of if it was actually non-financial data that was covered elsewhere in the standards, that we should be reflecting that also in the taxonomy. So I think that's where we were. I'll ask the group if I've managed to pass on all of the comments we had and welcome your views.
Any additional comments from that group? Having not sat in for that group, and I think that there is a fascinating feedback, and to me, the linkage between what you fed back and what's come back from the others as well. I mean, you talk about disruptive technology, and to me, it goes around that role and relevance of the board that Goro's group talked about in terms of the mandate, you know, particularly some of those things you know, around the use, basically the use of the data and how people are going to access things. And I also thought it was fascinating thinking about, you know, getting these youngsters in, and maybe that is a challenge to HDSA for the board to get some youngsters in to think, well, what might be, sorry, Hugh, you don't meet that category, around what might be, you know, some of those technologies that we, quite frankly, just can't think about. But also the link you talked there about the disrupt and around the integrated reporting, and also the experience of the board members. You know, so obviously all of these questions, I think, link together. Comments from those not in the group in terms of questions that they want to ask. And Paul, you first, I think.
Thanks, Joanna. I was in the group, but...
Okay.
No, I'm just mentioning that so you know. And this may be a crazy comment, but it just came up as I was listening to Stephen then. The idea of having somebody who's got the IT savvy or future risky views, as Stephen just mentioned, on the board or in the staff, even if that proved too much to actually put on the board, just thinking about the discussion before lunch about membership of this council, or even a guest visitor to this council now and then, you may even consider having somebody, whoever that is, with that savvy, actually either as a functional member of this or actually, you know, presenting to this now and then, whether it's once in the year. And it just might help generate ideas. To Stephen's point, we do the same thing with our firm in terms of getting people in who aren't accountants but start throwing, you know, things up about disruptive technologies that we've never even thought of and didn't know were out there, and it starts you to think a little bit about your own business. So I'll just throw that as a suggestion.
Thank you for that. Lothar.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know, I may be stating the obvious, but somehow in my perception in all this discussion about the technological development, it doesn't always become clear. I mean, to me, the key issue is not the availability of some data by companies on their websites, in the internet, in Wikipedia or whatever. It seems to me the key task and responsibility of the ISB is defining data, right? To define how an event, a business event or a transaction or whatever, has to be reported. That's a difficult thing to do, but that's the thing. Not all data which companies produce and can produce in the future is affected by that. It cannot be affected because it's far too much. So isn't the thinking, shouldn't the thinking be more within this flood and huge amount of data which comes out, to really make clear what are the defined areas, like which data rooms are actually regulated by what IFRS is saying. So a primary statement plus everything which belongs to it would be kind of the level one. And then other financial information may still have some guidelines they have to follow. So in some data rooms or somehow pegged, that's information which should at least follow basic guidelines on transparency and consistency or whatever. And so you carve out some areas, and they're in specific data rooms, or they're specifically tagged, and they have that data has to follow certain definitions, and the rest, of course, will be their 90% companies will come up with whatever they want to come up with. But that's kind of off limits. It's what they do.
Stephen, do you want to comment on whether your group traversed that?
I'm not sure we did. I don't think we were trying to come up with an answer. I think we were just trying to basically get the concept that, you know, we do, and as I said at the start, I think we felt and we stated that we felt that the board's responsibility is for high quality reporting. It's more a case of just being ready if the technology changes, to be ready to move if it's necessary. So I don't think it was to try and say we need to change things at the moment. It was more we need to be aware of what might be happening and to be able to respond to it.
To be fleet of foot and ready to respond. Yep. Okay. Jim?
I essentially agree with the gentleman at the end there, that the purpose for the board here is to focus on how to account or depict the economic substance of the transactions. And it's up to the, since it's also focused primarily on listed companies, it's up to each jurisdiction to decide what information, you know, gets presented and what technology gets used to, you know, to provide or that information to investors and other users. I think it'd be a real struggle for the board to pick up the, you know, kind of the responsibility of trying to figure out what technologies and how to, or how to deliver the information. Other going beyond, you know, if you want to call it financial statement presentation.
Okay, thank you for that, Gavin.
So I guess from my perspective, it is all about the data. It's not really about the technology, it's about the data. And actually, to me, that illustrates a really big challenge for the ISB as a standard setter going forward, because I think you hit the nail on the head with the definition of the data point is going to be key. So we're entering a world where companies have massive data lakes that, you know, they will make available to the market in some way, shape or form. So the real competition then becomes, how do you define those data points? And there are competitors out there to the ISB in terms of defining those data points. So different people have different interests in defining certain data points in different ways. And I think, you know, the sort of financial reporting data set is a relatively small component of the overall data pool that any company will have available. You know, we, like any big organization, of course, want to drive consistency and definition of data points so that we can use them for multiple purposes. So we often face, you know, challenges internally about, well, we've got this requirement over here, this over here, this over here. How can we interpret, define them in a way that actually we then end up with one definition that we can use for multiple purposes? So I think that's a very different world than historically where we've come from.
Peter.
My comment actually was reasonably similar to Gavin's, but I'll just build on it slightly. I understand the UK Financial Reporting Lab is working on precisely this issue at the moment, and they're doing a piece, if I remember rightly, it's called something like Company Reporting in the Digital World. And they've also recently published something about what investors are expecting in the way of digital communications on financial reporting. So it seems to me it's sensible for the ISAB to tap into what's going on all around in companies, in the various people like the FRC, and try and encourage these issues to be dealt with at the local level. And I think there's quite, I'm told, I have not actually been to the lab to talk to them about it, but I've told it's a pretty interesting piece of work they're doing. I don't know if you're involved with it, are you?
I'm not, but I am aware of the initiative. But I think what it demonstrates to me is how this issue comes back into the first session that we had in terms of how the ISB, you know, should or needs to interact with other players in reporting. And, you know, they're very varied, but as I said, they have exactly the same challenge that I think the ISB will have going forward in terms of defining data. So it sort of brings us full circle in a way.
I agree. I think it does bring us a full circle that they cannot be considered in isolation. I'm now, unless there are any other comments, I'm going to ask, and he's pulling a face, David and Yael, to make any remarks that they would like to, and don't sit there smugly, Michelle, Michelle and or Sheila or anybody else, from the feedback that has been provided there in terms of any questions you've got of the groups or value that you've got or really any other concluding comments as a result of that session. So any of you. Michelle wants to start.
No, just to say nothing came as a shock to me, which is good news. I think it was a very interesting presentation of the views of the relevant groups. I will not elaborate on that now because there are a number of suggestions that need to be thought about, and we will do that in due course. But I would like to thank you all for your contribution, and I do appreciate the thinking. There are lots of issues I'm in agreement with. There are a few questions that I'm not ready to deal with now because they are extremely complex, if only the last one, maybe because I'm not necessarily the most updated to the new technologies.
I just have to share with you an anecdote, because Wikipedia was mentioned, and recently we had a challenge with Wikipedia because apparently our page at Wikipedia included a couple of errors, factual errors, and a couple of ideological attacks against us. And we had a serious debate between us whether is it all right for us to amend the page. And Wikipedia pages say that, you know, you have not to be conflicted to be one of the editors. And that brings a whole set of issues around. I4S is a common asset and everybody contributes to it, but should we have an authority around you know, creating the rules? And this is why I was intrigued by that comment. And maybe it would be in the future a development, but at the moment it's kind of even hard for us. I'm telling you, we are, for example, developing a new project for the new website, and I wanted to have this in line of, you know, being modern and up to date, have a chat room on interpretations. But when we thought about having a chat room on interpretations in our website, and that might be an endorsement to all sorts of crazy ideas, you kind of go back to your conservative kind of very formal way of thinking. So the challenge around the, you know, technology and the other corporate reporting developments is not a simple one for us.
And maybe I will raise, say, as a challenge to you, and we've heard a number of times around how long it takes to do things and how many reviews of reviews of reviews that we have. And yes, we are absolutely renowned as being a standard setter and the due process and all the, but maybe we're just that little bit too precious about it. And in order to get consistency of application, maybe your chat room is exactly what it is. So someone who is sitting in New Zealand can have a chat with someone who is sitting in the Ukraine or wherever and actually say, well, this is what that means to me and it's what it means to me. And actually that's how you get consistency. Sorry, I'm now being really provocative and challenging. And Michelle wants...
No, just a comment. There is an article in The Economist, I don't know whether it is this week or the week before, on blockchains and the way they are used for bitcoins. And I went through this paper. I didn't understand most of it, obviously. But I think we shouldn't panic. We should stick to a few simple ideas. We might be in a situation where information is out of control, but it shouldn't be because of us. We should be able, like Jim said, to describe transactions, describe assets, describe liabilities, and at least stick to our mission, even if we can understand that there will be a host of ways to analyze, to organize information besides our own efforts. And I don't think we are able to encompass the whole future, but let's try to have strong building blocks that are consistent with the needs of the markets as they are today.
Masamichi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, today's discussion at this breakout group was quite illuminating for me. And one of the enlightenments that I got was, of course, to compare ourselves with FIFA, which I've never done before. But the other point is that, well, there were many points that came up in this discussion that directly concerned the monitoring board, which, again, should not be a surprise, perhaps, but at the same time was, at least in this particular structural review, not the direct subject of it. And so going forward, I think we do need to make an effort at the Monitoring Board and with your support from the Foundation, consistency between what the Monitoring Board has been doing and also what you'll be doing in the context of this review. And then, of course, in the end, this has to be a single outcome, which also means that you may not want to consider the Monitoring Board as part of the Foundation, but at least we're very closely attached to it, and we cannot just have afford to have something separate in this context. So, but anyway, I will bring back some thoughts coming out of this discussion to the monitoring board so that we can have ourselves closely engaged and also be transparent to you and to the public.
Thank you very much for that and sharing those thoughts with us. Lota, I think that you're probably going to have the last word.
Oh, no. I just wanted to come back to Wikipedia just quickly. Because, well, I certainly wouldn't suggest for ISB to try and control or have data which is published on Wikipedia conform to IFRS unless somebody states explicitly that it is. But I was coming to another point. Maybe in this issue of mistakes or agitation on the website of describing ISB and IFRS, maybe the advisory council can become helpful in doing something about it. So, I mean, you could let us know, because we're not a member of the organization in that sense.
If there's any formal editor for Wikipedia, please come to me. I'll be happy to inform you what I need to change.
All right, final comments, if any, from David or, yeah, David?
Just to say a big thank you for all your input. Certainly the breakout group I attended was a fascinating discussion. I hope from that you realised just how much challenge we face in just trying to come to solutions. So as well, yeah, as Stephen and the others said, well, we came up with ideas but no real solutions. So please indulge us as we go forward, because when we get the responses in, go back to the trustees, I think now you've got some insights into just how challenging a job and a review this is. But again, thank you very much.
And I don't think that any of us have ever doubted how challenging it is. And certainly, and I know you're going to come back to us with summaries of or the next stage, if you like, around that feedback. And I hope that the council can add further value to the process going forward. Sheila, anything that you want to add from the value or comments from what's happened?
Well, I listened with great interest to the comments about the composition of the trustees and the board. Noted.
Hans, anything from you before we wrap up this session? No? Okay, I'd like to reiterate the thanks. I thought that the discussions were really very valuable, very robust, traversed an awful lot. As David said, yes, perhaps a lot of ideas, not necessarily solutions. However, I think it widens, it helps the thinking for the foundation and for the board. And I'm not going to try and summarise all of those now. However, I just, as I say, like to thank everybody. And as I said earlier, to encourage you with this fresh in your mind and hopefully having made some notes around the discussions to actually go back and think, and maybe even to think, well, okay, we've come up with ideas. What might some of those solutions be in terms of a submission on the document? How much longer has it got to go?
30th of November.
30th of November. So you've got another month, basically, to come up with your submission. Okay, on that note, again, thank you. Great session.